You're listening to Girls with Grafts, a burn community podcast created by Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors, a leading nonprofit dedicated to supporting the burn community. In this podcast, we'll talk with burn survivors, share resources to help with supporting and improving burn recovery, and discuss how to prevent burn injuries. Here are your hosts, burn survivors and Phoenix Society's marketing team, Amber Wilcox and Rachel Kudlak.
Hello and welcome back to Girls with Grafts. I am Rachel Kudlak. I am one of the hosts of the podcast. And today I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Amber Wilcox.
Hello. Thanks for joining us for another wonderful episode today. Excited to get started. But before we do, as always, we want to give a special shout out to today's sponsor. So without further ado, Rachel, can you introduce our sponsor today?
Yes. So today's podcast is powered by the Cunningham Law Firm, located in Phoenix, Arizona, and helping clients nationwide. The Cunningham Law Firm specializes in personal injury, wrongful death, and burn-related cases. You can learn more about their firm by visiting cunninghamlawfirm.com.
And we'll make sure to put the link for Cunningham Law Firm in our show notes and description so that you can access it anytime. So Rachel, tell me about today's guest. I'm excited.
Yes, I'm very excited to have on Dr. Jason Hurd today. After sustaining a burn injury on almost half of his body at the age of 12, Dr. Jason Hurd was drawn to the medical field and knew he wanted to help other burn survivors in the future. He completed his Bachelor of Science degree in genetics and biotechnology at the University of Iowa in 2011. And during his undergraduate years, he completed many burn-related research projects, leading to multiple peer-reviewed publications. He was also able to be heavily involved with a regional burn nonprofit organization, St. Florian Fire and Burn Foundation. And through this organization, Jason was able to not only attend, but to develop programming for multiple burn survivor programs. He was also fortunate enough to serve on their board of directors from 2012 to 2014. He enrolled into medical school at the University of Iowa College of Medicine in 2012 and matched into general surgery residency at UC Davis in 2016, and ultimately completed his residency at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinic in 2021. Jason's passion for burn care and his aspiration of doing burn and critical care persisted throughout his training, and he completed his fellowship at the UC Davis in 2022. He is currently a faculty member at UC Davis and Shriners Northern California Burn Units, where he continues to care for burn survivors during initial hospital admission throughout their recovery, including reconstructive procedures and treatments. And lastly, Jason is also on our Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors Board of Directors.
Welcome, Jason. It's so good to have you on today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Jason, you and I know one another, and I think you and Rachel have chatted, but for those that are listening today, and I know Rachel gave that wonderful bio, but we'd love to learn a little bit more about your journey as a burn survivor before we kind of get into the medical aspects of your career.
Yeah, definitely. So my kind of journey as a burn survivor started with my own burn injury when I was 12. It was May 2nd, 2003. I was pouring gasoline on a fire that was already going, and the 10-gallon gas can I had exploded, that was in my hands, exploded, kind of covering me with gasoline. And so it was, I tried stop, dropping, and rolling, tried to put out the fire, but I couldn't put out the fire until I ran upstairs and got into the shower to get the flames out. Like you said, I was burned on 40% of my body, almost half of my body. I have skin grafts on about 30% of my body. All of my care was my acute care burn surgeries were done in Iowa City at the University of Iowa. And then I had several reconstructive procedures done at a Shriners Hospital in Cincinnati. I've kind of been involved in the burn community ever since my burn injury, either going to burn camps or going back to volunteer on the burn unit or do research. And then now I'm a burn surgeon, so all I do is take care of burn survivors. But the Phoenix Society is kind of always been there for me and for my family during my recovery, including Phoenix Society helped give me some grants to go to school. And now I get to serve on their board of directors and can continue to help burn survivors all over the world.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all of that. You really, once you became a burn survivor, you really didn't leave our community at all. Now you're stuck with us forever, for sure.
Yeah, forever. And I couldn't think of a better community to be a part of.
I love that. Well, before we kind of dive into more with, you know, your medical experience and background, I wanted to ask you, you know, being burned as a 12-year-old, what was it like for you after your initial injury, going back to school, especially at the teenage years? That's such a transformational period in all of our lives, let alone when you are a newly injured burn survivor.
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, it happened when I was 12. And so I turned 13 shortly after I was discharged from the hospital and had to go back to, so it happened in seventh grade. So I would have been going back to eighth grade. I was definitely scared going back because I looked different. I had some really immature scars. My face looks better now, but I had a pretty thick hypertrophic scar and a skin graft on my face that was very obvious. And I was worried what people would think. Before I even went back to school, the hospital I was treated at had a school reentry program where the nurses, a child life specialist, and some other team members would go to my school ahead of time and kind of tell people, this is what to expect. This is what Jason may look like now. These are things you can do to help them. These are things that are not helpful, which I think helped set me off on the right foot when I went returned at the beginning of eighth grade. But it was scary. It was hard, but I was fortunate enough that I had a great support group, good circle of friends that still remained my friend and treated me exactly the same. There would be kids in other classes that didn't know who I was and would stare. And the Phoenix Society had a great program where you learn a quick little phrase that you can say to kind of dismiss the staring. Where I would say, yep, I was hurt. I'm fine now. Thanks for asking. And it kind of dismisses it and they could stop staring. But it was more the community that was harder for me to return to than my school. I felt a lot of support in the school. But going out to like the grocery store, for example, it would be very often mm-hmm. that I would catch people staring, especially kids. And kids would be more genuine about it, just be curious, like, oh, what happened? Why do you look this way? It was easier to handle, but adults were harder for me because they would stare. And when you would kind of catch them staring or look at them, they would look away. And as soon as you looked away, they would look back at you. And they didn't have as much genuine curiosity. They were more just staring. But over time, that got better. I either learned to ignore it or I got quicker at dismissing it. But yeah, that's kind of what I experienced.
Yeah, I had that same experience too with, you know, and I think all burn survivors don't really care when kids stare because they're just generally curious.
Yeah.
But the adults, when they're caught staring, are always quick to turn away instead of just asking you what happened or if you're comfortable sharing. So, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's funny how we all know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, so I know we talked a little bit about kind of your experience as a survivor, but at what point when you were growing up did you, and I know you said the Phoenix Society has helped you with some scholarships and whatnot, did kind of your connection with the Phoenix Society like push you to want to be a doctor? Like, what was it that kind of stopped and thought, like, I really want to become a doctor?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been asked it before, and it's hard for me to pinpoint an exact time. I grew up with a brother who was paralyzed at a young age. So I was often kind of having to help him with things. So I always had this kind of natural tendency to help people. But I don't think I had any clue what I wanted to do when I was burned at age 12. And there was some point shortly after I got out of the hospital and went back to school that it kind of crossed my mind that I like helping people and I have this personal connection to burn injuries and burn survivors and that I could help burn survivors. But I was a good student. I was always kind of ahead of my class whenever I was studying in, but I didn't get good grades. I didn't care what my grades were. I just wanted to get the task done and go out and play or do whatever else I wanted to do. But I think once that shift to me wanting to become a doctor changed, that's when I really kind of got my butt in gear and made sure that I got good grades so that I could get into college, get into medical school, and then go on and kind of live my dream of helping other burn survivors. I wish I could tell you like this day is what it was, but I think it was just my burn injury in general. It kind of shifted my path to very clearly knowing what I wanted to do when it was really ambiguous before.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. What is your favorite part about being a burn surgeon now?
My favorite part of being a burn surgeon now is seeing patients during their kind of survivor recovery phase, especially children. I mean, adults get this too, but kids are so, they're usually so innocent and they just want to get better. They just want to get out and play. And when you see these kids that have really terrible injuries that are in the ICU, sick for a long time, get to the point where they can be out of the ICU and out in our general play area, just knowing like 1 month ago, you were kind of on death's door and here this kid is playing basketball in our common play area a month later, just seeing tremendous growth and recovery in patients is what I enjoy the most. Patients that thought they were never going to be normal again, never look the same, never use their hands, can't go back to work, who come back and we see them in clinic and they're like, yep, I started work again a couple of weeks ago. And you're right, it's no different than before. I just have scars now. That's what I enjoy the most, is seeing patients and survivors recover and kind of reintegrate back into society and do well.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure, Jason, as a doctor, or if you're with other survivors, or, you know, wherever you are, you're getting lots of questions, right? Whether you're like in your clinic or you're just like at a dinner table with me, right? Like, I'm sure we talked about a lot of things or questions. So yeah. I'm sure that comes up a lot. And I can imagine as a doctor, like how much and how often you're having to like answer some of those questions. But yeah. If you were to think of like all of the different things you're being asked all the time, whether it was in the clinic or, you know, with survivors that you're interacting with, what are some of the common questions or maybe even concerns that you get, not only from survivors, but from caregivers as well?
Yeah. Probably the most common one that I see now when I'm at like survivor events is, what would you do with this scar, is kind of the very generic question that I get. Like, they'll say like, this is what my hand looks like. What would you do with this? This is what my arm looks like. Could you do anything different? Those are the biggest, kind of the most common one. The other one I get is like, what should I be doing for this wound? A lot of burn survivors have kind of chronic wounds that either heal and reopen or never heal. And they're always wondering what can we do differently that I haven't already done to see if I can get a wound to heal. Those are kind of the two most common questions that I've encountered.
Mm-hmm. What kind of questions do you get, especially when you're treating the children or the younger survivors? Like, what questions do parents always have?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm sure my parents had the same questions when I was in the hospital. And it really depends on where they're at in their phase of recovery. Burn injuries, especially for children now, are almost uniformly survivable. We can save 95% to 99% TBSA burns, as long as there's some donor site. But it depends on their size of the burn and where they're at in the recovery. So if it's early on, it's, is my kid going to survive, is what we often get in the ICU. And in general, almost all kids survive their burn injury. So that one's an easy one to answer. And then once parents, they hear it, but once they believe it and they see their kids starting to get better, the questions sort of become like, what will my kid's life be? Like, will they have a normal job? Will they have someone that they love and can be intimate with? Will they be able to play baseball, use their whatever activities they enjoy? Will they be able to play baseball again? Will they be able to play football again? Are the common questions I get. And then when they're more of an outpatient, it's, what can you do to help my kid be more functional? Like, if they have some spinal contracture that's making it so they can't type or can't play an instrument or throw the ball the way that they want to, it's, what can you do to help my kid become more functional?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all great questions. I'm sure that parents are dying to know the answers to and want answers and results immediately.
Yes. Yep, definitely.
So Jason,
go ahead.
As we're talking through medical, kind of all the different questions you're getting, I know that it can also probably be difficult as a doctor because there are different things that are consistently changing, right, in medical care, whether it's burns or kind of other things, right? Like, I know that what worked 10 years ago may not work today, right? And so when we talk about trends or things that you've seen in burn care recently, are there things like topics or things that you find? I know like the use of different types of skin grafts, right, is always like a hot topic. But are things that are changing in burn care that you've noticed recently, or laser treatment, right, is always one. Something that you want to specifically highlight or talk about for our community that may be like a new development in burn care?
Yeah. I would say for the kind of general burn survivor community, lasers is kind of the newest thing. And it's not that new anymore. I mean, even I had laser treatment when I was 14, so that would have been, what, 2004? So we've been doing it for 20 years, but we're learning more about it, and we're better at it, and we have different lasers and different things that we can add to the lasers that can help with scar, kind of how thick the scar is, how pliable the scar is, elasticity, suppleness, moisture, itch can all be affected with the CO2 laser, the modern CO2 laser techniques that we're doing. So that's the kind of thing that I can help, that helps most burn survivors or anyone with scars, is the laser therapy. But there are a couple of new technologies that we use in the acute period. So when someone first comes in with a burn injury, that I can talk about as well, as if you think that would be helpful.
I'm sure listeners would love to hear that.
Yeah. So the split thickness skin graft is kind of the workhorse of burn surgery. So split thickness skin grafts are where we take all of the epidermis and part of the dermis, not the full layer of the dermis. We use a dermatome to harvest a piece of skin. We mesh it. So we take what would be a regular, otherwise smooth piece of skin. We poke holes in it so that it becomes expanded and we can cover larger areas. And that's what we've been doing since the beginning of burn surgery, is the split thickness skin graft. There currently is no technology that we have that lets us grow skin that has an epidermis component and a dermal component, but there is in other countries. So Canada has one, Europe has one, and eventually the United States will have one, where we theoretically could grow full thickness skin that we could then use as skin grafting. So maybe there is some hope on the horizon that we could do donorless skin grafting surgery, which that's most burn survivors experience. The donor sites tend to be more painful than the actual burn wound itself. But that's not the case for everybody, but I would say most people report the donor site hurts the most. Most patients are in the hospital for a while after a skin grafting surgery because it can be painful. We're getting better at pain control and transitioning some burn survivors to outpatient treatment of their burn surgery, of their burn wound. So we have this new cryotherapy technology where we can freeze a nerve that supplies a donor site area. And so if we do a skin graft as an outpatient and we freeze the nerves, that area of their thigh or wherever we're taking the donor site can be numb. It stays numb for a few weeks, so they could go home and then come back to get their dressing change in the clinic, for example. A couple other technologies is something called biodegradable temporizing matrix. I don't know, it's not something that's super well public yet, but it's been around since about 2018. And it's a way that we can temporize burn wounds. So obviously if someone has a really large amount of their body that's burned, there's not enough unburned skin to do skin grafting on all of their burns, but keeping the burned kind of dead skin on somebody can be a source of infection or inflammation, and it's hard to recover while you still have burned skin on. And so we remove all of the burned skin in the burn operating room, and ideally we put their own skin and split thickness autograft on. But sometimes when there's not enough, in the past we had to use cadaver skin, or what we call allograft in the medical community, which has its own kind of benefits and pros and cons. But there's the newer technology, the BTM, biodegradable temporizing matrix, is a polyurethane foam type dressing that you can put down after you remove the burned skin, and the patient's body grows into it over 2 to 3 weeks, and then we can skin graft on it. And we've seen some really good results with it, and we think it's been really helpful for our hospital. So it may be something that kind of newer burn survivors may experience or may come across while they're in the hospital.
Those all sound amazing. I'm especially jealous of the cold therapy one with the donor sites, because I think everyone listening would probably be willing to sign up for that.
Definitely. If it was around, I would have loved all of my donor sites to be cryo ablated and let my thigh be numb for a month. I'd be fine, as long as I don't have to experience the pain of a donor site.
That was everyone always asks, like, what was the worst pain? And I'm always like, the donor site, like everything else I could deal with. It's the pain of the donor site that had me. And like the idea, and I still like to this day, like of my husband having to like peel off the dressings every day. Right. Like, and we got better at it, but.
Yeah. But just imagine if it was numb the whole time, like taking off that dressing or washing your donor site, you could just shower with your donor site.
I would have ripped it off, but it was like this grueling like process where my husband, like 3 hours a day would change my, you know, dressings and like literally have to like inch it off while I screamed. So yeah, I for sure would love it to be numb.
Definitely better. And another technology that I forgot to mention is it's called RECELL, or the generic term is like cell suspension autograft. It's a spray on skin graft. I have no conflicts. I'm not paid by any of these companies. They're things that I've used in my practice. It's also a game changer, and we're kind of using it more and learning more about its benefits. But what it does is it takes a really small skin graft. So usually, I don't know, about the size of a postage stamp or so. And you put the skin graft in some proprietary enzymatic bath that breaks up all the cell connections and makes a cell suspension and a buffer solution that we can then spray onto a burn. It was designed initially to be used for second degree burn, so the intermediary group of depth of burn injury. And to avoid a skin graft, you spray these cells on and it acts like a spray on skin graft with a very small donor site. Which they've seen some really good results with. We typically use it more for when we have really wide mesh skin grafts. When we take a skin graft and put it through the mesher, we can have it so that they're kind of the mesh patterns really close together and get wider and wider depending on how big of an area we have to cover. When we spray the spray on skin graft kind of over the holes of the mesh skin graft, it helps it heal faster. And we also spray it on the donor sites to help those heal faster too. And we've had patients really like that too, that they get to heal faster. And ultimately, if you use a smaller donor site and you can use a bigger mesh graft, you end up with less donor site overall, which may help with pain and the other issues that donor sites can bring.
So for those listening to the podcast, maybe they're still in the hospital recovering from their initial injury. How can survivors and even caregivers advocating for them, I guess, ask about these products or like talk to their care teams? I know each hospital is different and not every hospital offers the same treatments, but I guess how can our survivors and listeners like advocate for some of these treatments?
Yeah. So if you're in the hospital with like your acute burn injury, and you know, learn about these technologies, the easiest thing is just to talk to the physician, the nurse practitioner, the nurse that's taking care of you, and just say, do you guys have experience with this? Do you know anyone that has this? And just have a frank discussion with them, because it may just be that, yes, that hospital has that technology, but there are patients that I would not use it on that wouldn't benefit from it. There's something else I would use, or I would use the standard kind of skin grafting. It's patient dependent or situation dependent when you would use one thing over the other. And so the easiest thing is just talk to the people taking care of you and say, hey, I heard about this. Am I a candidate for this? Why or why not? And I would say most providers would be very comfortable saying, oh, yep, you would be a candidate for that. We were going to talk about it. Or no, this is why I don't think it's a good idea for you. And the other thing is laser. It's really hard to get insurance to approve laser these days. It's hard to get insurance companies to do a lot these days, even standard of care things insurance companies sometimes push back on. And lasers typically are the most common use for the CO2 laser is for cosmetic procedures in an outpatient setting and like a laser center, dermatologist, plastic surgeon. But burn survivors need it not for cosmetic reasons, but for functional reasons. It makes scars more pliable, stretchy, helps with itch, kind of very medically relevant reasons to use laser. And so there's not great, everything is done based on coding. There are not great codes for lasers to be used for medical purposes because the majority of them are used for cosmetic purposes. So it's hard to get access to a laser, but there are ways around it. And you'll just have to find a center that has found these workarounds and can work with you and your insurance company and be patient. But every burn survivor that has a candidate scar that meets certain characteristics should have access to laser. And if you get persistent and find somewhere to do it, you should be able to get it.
Mm-hmm. So I know with laser specifically, like my burn center in Orlando didn't have the capabilities at the time, but I had heard about laser, wanted to do laser, and they were able to refer me right to a burn center that had laser. So I would assume it's similar. Like if it's, if you're willing to travel, is it unfortunate? Yes. Cause it was a haul anytime we wanted to, but I do think for the survivors out there that are willing and perhaps able to travel for that type of care, like it was worth it, right? It was a big commitment, but it was definitely helpful. So Jason, I know my answer to this question, but as a survivor, like there's different ways, right, to stay. Like I didn't maybe know about laser if it weren't for being connected with the Phoenix Society. But what are some ways or things that you would recommend, like to stay up to date on, like, what are my options? Because I think sometimes as survivors, I know for me, it was important for me to know about other technologies to understand, like, right. So you just talked about like the cold therapy or things like that. Like that may not be available in every burn center, but I do know like my burn team was always open to like questions that I had or suggestions or things that I wanted to do. What kind of advice would you give for somebody to like learn about the latest thing, right? Like maybe they don't want to have that pain and they want other options. And this is like their second go around at a surgery or something. What recommendations would you have?
Yeah. Kind of the easiest one is to be connected to a survivor group like Phoenix Society or other survivor groups that exist in the country, especially if it's one that's not just local or regional, if it's more of a national or even global survivor group, because you can learn from other burn survivors what they've gone through or what different treatments they've been offered before. So you can kind of have a discussion about what's new, because people will be joining these groups at different levels in their recovery or different stages in their journey. But the other thing is checking back in with the burn center you were treated at every so often. The burn surgery community is actually relatively small in the medical community. There's not a lot of burn centers in the country relative to hospitals. And so it's very specialized. And usually there's team members from every burn center that go to national and international meetings kind of around the world to learn about the newest technology or what other people are doing. And just because you had a burn injury 20 plus years ago, doesn't mean there's some new technology now like laser that you wouldn't have known about if you either didn't talk to somebody who had it or go back to your burn center and just say, hey, the scars still bother me. Is there anything new that you could offer? Because I bet there's a lot of burn survivors out there that would be good candidates for newer technologies. But if they don't check back in, they may not learn about them.
Yeah. So that brings me to a question kind of about going back to lasers for a second.
Yeah.
So for example, I have third-degree burns on my arms and they aren't like tight to the point where I can't use them, obviously, but there's skin tightness there. So when we go back to talking about insurance and what is getting approved, like how do you navigate that? Other than being patient and just going through the process?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it would be relatively impossible for a single person to try and solve all the solutions to getting a laser procedure approved at a place that doesn't have a history of doing it. The insurance mm-hmm. world is very good at putting up barriers, and you have to know the right forms, the right lingo, the right people to make it work. And so the best way to navigate it is to find somewhere that is doing it and already has success with getting insurance approval, or be prepared to pay quite a bit out of pocket. But I think the best way right now is to find a burn center, or it doesn't even have to be a burn center. There's some dermatologists and some plastic surgeons that will do laser and are very good at getting it paid for by insurance companies if there's medical necessity. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be almost impossible for an individual to try and navigate all of mm-hmm. that by themselves at a burn center that doesn't do it. I would let the hospitals figure out those kind of dynamics. But advocacy is important also when it comes to lasers. I can remember several American Burn Association meetings where people will talk about the difficulties they have about getting insurance approval for lasers and how frustrated all of the surgeons are. And if the surgeons are that frustrated, you can only imagine how frustrated all the patients are, all the survivors are that need this laser. So I know the Phoenix Society, the American Burn Association, several other groups are working on advocacy to create better codes and billing mechanisms to get laser approved without all these hoops that people have to jump through in time. Because the longer it takes for them to get access to the laser, the longer they have to kind of put up with the symptoms of tight, thick, itchy scars when we know it can be helpful to get a laser.
Definitely. And like you said, too, I mean, I think that was a great point of finding, maybe it's not a burn center, but some organization that's already been doing this type of procedure, whether it's laser or something else. Yeah. And, you know, for our listeners who want to find, you know, maybe local foundations or hospitals that do this, you know, contact Phoenix Society. Also, we do have a great Facebook group dedicated for survivors and caregivers that you could post, like, that you're in X area, you're looking for a surgeon on whatever it may be. That could be another great way to get some help for some of those local resources.
Definitely. For sure. And on that same point, I remember receiving an email or a document at some point in the last 6 months about what your burn center offers for laser, for reconstructive surgeries, et cetera, that was sent out to all burn centers. So I'm hopeful in the future there will be some sort of central location you go to look to see which hospitals do have success with laser and getting insurance approval. So maybe you can have kind of a quicker reference point to find somewhere that's closer to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, as we go through talking about like advice and tips, I know there are many different stages, right, of burn care. So for those that are maybe early on in their recovery, they have a lot more challenges than those are like later on in their recovery. But as a burn surgeon, I'm sure it's really kind of difficult to know how to help all survivors, right? Because your journey, and I think it probably is more difficult for you than it may be other surgeons who are not survivors because you had dealt with it firsthand, right? So I think we talked a little bit about this when you and I had dinner that one night, Jason, of like, as a survivor, I'm sure you have a different perspective and you give different advice than maybe like another surgeon would. How do you approach that? Because especially because, and I know we've talked a little bit about this, but like, I'm sure it's really difficult for you to like take the survivor out of it, right? And have to kind of approach it from a different lens, but also still be able to offer advice that maybe, you know, works for yourself or others. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And it's a constant struggle for me because yes, I'm a burn survivor. So I have a very different perspective than all of my partners who are not burn survivors. But they also have tons of experience taking care of burn patients. And so they kind of have their own evidence and things that they've heard have worked for other burn survivors. But for me personally, it's hard because I try and at times separate myself as their surgeon, as your provider, as your surgeon, as your doctor, and as a survivor. How we rotate and take care of patients here, there's times where I'm not clinically active. I'm just doing either research, administrative work, where that's when I can really kind of wear my survivor hat and go around and talk to patients, talk to families, and tell them about my experiences and what worked for me and what may work for them. But I try and maintain a more kind of professional doctor-patient relationship, especially if I'm their surgeon or their intensivist taking care of them in the ICU. Because I don't want to introduce any potential bias. I don't want them to agree to a treatment plan just because a burn survivor recommended it to them. I want it to be because their physician recommended it to them. But it's a gray area, and I definitely violate that kind of strict "I'm your surgeon only, not survivor" when on a case-by-case basis, when people really need to know, really need to hear that things will get better. Because I would say most of the time, I mean, most of my scars are places that I can easily cover with clothing if I want to, but I don't. And most of the time when I tell people, have you ever met anybody with skin grafts? Have you ever seen a skin graft before? When I'm consenting them for surgery, if they're having a hard time, they'll say, no, I know nobody. And I'll be like, oh, well, I've had skin grafts. And they'll be like, oh, where? And then I'll just like lift up my arm and show it to them. I'll be like, oh, I would have never noticed if you didn't tell me, kind of thing. But it's also hard too, because everyone scars differently. Everybody's journey is a little bit different. And so I also don't want to set the expectation that just because my skin grafts look like this, it does not mean your skin grafts are going to look like this. And so it's a really delicate balance of kind of playing the survivor card and being strictly their surgeon.
I imagine that's probably more challenging, right, as a doing both. And I can't imagine like what that's like for you, because I know how many questions I have, and I feel like it's probably so much easier for a surgeon who's not actually lived it. Yeah. But it's also probably really rewarding because you also understand it. So that I empathize, because that's probably a really difficult thing to, mm-hmm. to walk mm-hmm. all the time, right? Like, yeah. So that's, I cannot imagine.
Yeah, I would guess probably 75-80% of the people I've taken care of, survivors I've taken care of, probably don't know I'm a burn survivor. It's only maybe the 10-15% that notice it and ask, or the 5% that I tell that know. And that's fine. But when people are struggling, I will wear my survivor hat, and it's really helpful. And I think not even necessarily like as a survivor giving them, I try and make it clear, like, I'm recommending this as a surgeon, and as a survivor, I'm telling you this is what my experience is like. But I think more often they're looking just for hope, is what a lot of mm-hmm. patients and families are looking for. Sure. Is, will my life be normal again? And just by saying, yep, I'm a burn survivor, I don't even have to tell them, like, this is what my scars are like, this is what I did, blah, blah, blah. They just want to know, oh, you're a survivor and you're now a surgeon? Like, life does go on. It just sucks right now because you're living it, but it will get better in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for sharing all that too. Because at first I was like, oh, well, why wouldn't you just go tell everyone you're a burn survivor? Like, why wouldn't you introduce yourself that way? But now that you explain it, that makes a lot more sense, because it's not a gray area is the best way to describe it, essentially. Yeah. But you do have these two different hats that you have to wear.
Yeah, but and it's nice when you can empathize with your patients, because I've had many patients, certain survivors, tell me, like, they're having a really tough tub, that they're having a really rough day, and they're like, well, you have no idea what I'm going through. And I'll pull the survivor hat on and say, actually, I do know what you've been through. I mm-hmm. totally do, and I'm sorry you're going through it. We can make it better for you, but I have been what you're going through, and it will get better. So it's helpful too to have kind of that gray area. I can use it however is beneficial to me in the patient.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I know we're coming up here on our time a little bit too, but I did just want to ask, you know, as you know, we've talked a lot about the physical healing, that physical recovery, but for survivors, whether they're early on or maybe they're later on in their journey, what's like just some general advice or tips you have for survivors, you know, whether it's with their scarring or skin tightness or whatever it may be?
Yeah. So I can say personally for me, if it's skin tightness or itching, I really struggled with itching for like a year plus, where I just could not stop itching. One, medications, and two, just tons of lotion is the thing that helped me the most. Dryness drove a lot of my itching. And then also give yourself grace, and allow yourself to have moments or days or weeks where things aren't going well, where you're having a bad day, a bad week, and be accepting of that. It's hard to leave the hospital and kind of re-enter the world after a burn injury. I mean, I remember it because I was burned with gasoline. I was afraid to ride in a car for a while. We had a gas heater in our house. I was afraid to go into our basement. I was like, we have to make sure the gas isn't leaking every single day. I was terrified to fill the lawnmower to mow. But over time, and I kind of hate the adage, like a tincture of time will heal everything, but over time, it does. And I can't tell you, I worked with a therapist for a while. I had a great support network. But I really just needed time and experience to get through those things and just know that it does get better. And there are things you can do to make it better, like finding a good support network, working with a therapist if you need to, joining a burn survivor support group, listening to this podcast, like reaching out to the Phoenix Society, et cetera. But the biggest thing is just, it's okay to have bad moments and bad days, and just make the next day better.
I think that's important because when you said like, I was afraid of gas, right? Like, I've had questions before, like how long before you felt comfortable, like being, cause I was burned near with a stove, like hot caramel, right, splashed on me. So and still to this day, like there are still times, and I'm sure there are still time, like thoughts in your head sometimes where like, you know, I'm near a stove, I'm cooking a brown liquid, right? And things are sizzling and you're like, ooh, like, and when you stop, right? Like if I'm just doing it and not thinking, like it's one thing, but if you stop and you're like, oh, like to think this through sometimes, it does give you like that little like gut. And for a long time, like I didn't want to go in the kitchen at all. Like didn't even want to go in the kitchen. Then it was like, okay, I can go in the kitchen. I don't really want to be near the stove, or I don't want the stove on. And then it was like, okay, I can do it, but I'm really not going to feel great after. Right. So like it, like you said, time does heal that. But I also think there's still like always an underlying, like it gives me that heightened awareness. And it's not just like with my own injury. I feel like when I hear about others' injuries too, right? Like, okay, gasoline, like, yeah, not something I want to actively go around anymore. Like, or my husband and I like switched out all of our grills, right? Like after we had a friend who was burned, like who we'd heard like had an incident with gasoline. We're like, no more grills that have gasoline. And like, I think there is a level of like heightened awareness that you have, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's not like you can't be afraid to do anything, but it also is like, there's that heightened awareness of like, oh, 4th of July, right? Jason, how many like incidents do you see around fireworks, right? Where you're like, hey, I don't want to blow my finger off, right? On like the 4th of July. So there are like, there's good and bad, right? I feel like there's the level of like, oh, this is so great, right? During this time, like I am with time being able to go back into things. And then there's also that heightened awareness of like, I will not do these things because I have friends or I have personally suffered from this incident, right? Like, and I know, and I'm sure you're the same way with a surgeon. Like you've seen all these things. You're like, no, don't do this or this will happen.
Yeah. Cause I do trauma surgery too. And then you just, if you try and avoid every single thing that you see that can cause an injury, you will never leave your house ever again.
For sure.
But I think there's also some controlled ways that you can reintroduce things like that. For example, like I was burned when I was a kid, so we had a burn camp that I went to, and there was maybe 60 burn survivors that would come to the camp, and we always did big campfires every night. And I would think after all this time, I'm trying to think back of kid. None of the kids struggled with it because it was a very controlled environment. There was always adults like separating between the fire and where we were sitting, and I just thinking back, like, I was like, why didn't that bother me? And I think it's because it was a controlled setting. I was surrounded by my peers and there was no gasoline, at least none that I could see. But there are ways that you can kind of have a controlled reentry to things that may be hard for you to experience after an injury.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just to add to, you know, my injury had nothing to do with, you know, having a proper escape plan because I was 3 and I wasn't going to know how to follow that anyway, but using our injuries and our stories to help advocate others too. That's another great way to kind of like relieve, at least for me, like relieve my own anxiety, like making sure my friends are aware of kitchen safety, of having an escape plan, like testing smoke alarms, whatever it may be. But, you know, using our anxiety sometimes as a reason to advocate as well.
Yes. Anxiety is there for a reason. It helps you get your midterm turned in on time, your project.
And accidents happen, but it's like, exactly. if I can prevent it, right? If I can prevent it, why wouldn't I? Right. Like, exactly. And it sometimes takes traumatic hearing or experiencing or living through traumatic incidents for us to be safe. And I mean, that's a sad reality, unfortunately.
I think burn survivors are some of the best burn prevention experts out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we definitely are. And still sometimes I'm like, oh, I haven't tested my smoke alarms recently. Like, I should be doing that more often. And we can, you know, we're definitely, I think, the better ones following those rules. But we still, I even find myself slacking sometimes when I shouldn't be.
Absolutely.
Well, I know we are about to close out here shortly, but before we do, Jason, is there anything else that you want to share with our audience that you think it's important, whether it's as a survivor or as a burn surgeon, like, or even, you know, our audience expands to more than just survivors. There's caregivers. We have other burn experts, you know, other doctors and nurses that listen to this podcast. Anything you want to share with the world today?
Yeah, I think it just stay connected with the community, whether it's the Phoenix Society, whether it's your local community, whether it's a regional burn nonprofit, mm-hmm. or your burn center, just stay connected. Mm-hmm. It's really easy with everyone's busy lives these days to try and like just move on completely after a burn injury and not revisit or stay connected to community. But you might not know about different treatment strategies that can come out there. But you never know when you will have some trigger that triggers some thoughts about what happened either in the hospital or what caused your injury, or the injury of someone, of a loved one, if you're a caregiver. Caregivers need just as much support as the survivors do. And mm-hmm. so just stay connected to community. Even if you don't need that community every day at some point in your recovery, you may need them at 5 years after you never thought you would need them again. So just stay connected is my biggest advice.
I think that's a great reminder. I'm due to schedule my yearly burn checkup too. And so that's a great reminder too, to like get your skin checked, right? Like, yes. And whether it's with your local burn center or like regular dermatology, right? After my injury, it was like, oh, you know what? I need to get my skin checked to just make sure, like, especially because we're more susceptible. So that's a great reminder for our listeners out there.
Yes.
Well, Jason, we always ask two final questions. So my final question for you, and we talked about this a little bit, is there something that you'd like a caregiver to know? I know they're, my husband was like number one for questions, right? Like more so than I was, because I was kind of out of it, right? But anything that you would love to pass on to the caregivers out there that maybe are at home struggling with supporting a loved one, whether that's physically or emotionally?
Yeah, my number one thing is, you're doing a good job. I think caregivers are very hard on themselves. If the wound care they did wasn't perfect, they didn't say the perfect response to some comment that their loved one made, and you are doing the best you can do. And I remember I would get so mad at my dad if he took off my dressing the wrong way or or said the wrong thing when I said I was struggling with X. And just know that the person you're caring for still loves you, that they're struggling with you in different ways, and that you're both doing the best you can do, and things will get better. But to the caregivers out there listening, you're doing a good job. Keep doing the best you can do. It's never going to be perfect. It's okay not to have a perfect dressing. As long as you did the best you can do, they're going to heal fine. If someone has a spot that's not healing, it's not because you're not doing good wound care. It's just the mechanism of what happens with wound healing. You're doing a good job.
I love that. And so I don't know how you'll top that, but that was really good advice. But our final question, which is our Phoenix partner question, which today is sponsored by the Cunningham Law Firm, specializing in personal injury, wrongful death, and burn related questions. So their question is, what is one thing that always brings a smile to your face, no matter how tough your day has been? And it doesn't have to be burn survivor related. It can be anything.
Yeah. But it's going home and seeing my dogs, actually. Like
number one answer out there. if we were playing Family Feud, that'd be number one.
No matter how bad of a day I'm having, my dogs have no idea how bad of a mood I'm in or how bad of a day I've had. And even if they've had what could be considered a bad day for a dog, I don't know what that would be, but they're still so excited when I get home. They're wagging their tails. They jump up on me. They give me kisses. And it can like really reset my mood. I can be going home so pissed off about something that happened at work, and I can go home and my dogs reset me. And I'm just like, okay, we'll just go for a walk, or we'll go throw the ball. And it gives me time to clear my head and separate my work-life balance.
They're just so oblivious, which is the best thing. Yeah.
And they're so innocent, like the children I take care of. All they want to do is play and have fun and eat. And that's
And they don't care. Yeah. They don't care what you look like, how angry you've been. They're just ready to love you. So
yes. That's gonna be like, you have to be part of like when survivors go home from the hospital, like must get a dog or a cat within the next like year, because it will change your life. Apparently that's what everyone's been saying.
Every person on this podcast. I think there was one that hasn't been a dog, but I don't think they had a dog,
which is why.
I don't think they had a dog, but every single podcast we've had, I'm pretty sure it's been a dog. So
I mean, after I got out of the hospital, I turned 13, maybe like, few days after I got out of the hospital, and my older brother got me a puppy for my 13th birthday.
Amazing.
And he was like my best friend through my recovery. He was through med school. He died while I was in med school from a medical thing, but it was still like, it gave me a constant friend that I would always have, no matter how bad my day was when I went back.
And I think they know. I still believe like they know when you've had a rough day, or if you're struggling, like they know, and they'll they come. And I know, especially with injuries, right? Like my dog is a jumper. I don't know about your dogs, but mine is a jumper. And despite like, you know, all of those things, like we try to keep her away, right? Don't jump on my legs or anything. And she knew, like there were times where she'd just come, and I mean, she would test the line, right? But like want to come and just put her head right, like down on you. Or so they're very intuitive creatures as well. So
If you have dressings on, it is safe to have a dog around wounds. It is safe to let them jump on you. If they step on your dressing, it might hurt, but it's not going to hurt the wound itself. It might physically hurt. So it is, I encourage pets.
You heard it here first, friends. Yeah. I love
it. Yeah. Just keep it clean and a dressing on it, and it's safe to have animals.
Well, Jason, it has been a pleasure having you on our podcast today. Thank you for all the advice. I'm sure all the survivors, caregivers, and other burn specialists out there will really appreciate the advice you brought to us today. So absolutely. We wish you the very best, and we will talk to you hopefully again real soon. Thanks, everyone. Yep.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Girls with Grafts. If you are enjoying this content, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.